Today we're going to be speaking about how Chalvisol milk and I guess other products is created. Just to mention that Chazal said that we're not allowed to drink milk unless it's Chalvisol, which is to say that a Yid has to watch the milking to make sure that this milk comes from a cow or some other kosher species. And for today's discussion, we're going to just assume that milk has to be Chalvisol, the idea of Chalvstam, and maybe that should be permitted, will be discussed some other time. Today we're just going to assume that you need, that Chalvisol is what you're eating and producing. Maybe a little at the end we'll speak about Chalvstam for a second. So we're just going to give an overview of what does it take to make Chalvisol. We're going to basically split into two parts. The first part is going to be about the Hashgacha. And that is like this. If you opened up a Mishnayis, when Mishnah talks about Chalvisol, it says you need to have milk, has to be milked with a Yisrael or with a Yid watching it. And if you just read it simply, you would assume that that means is the Yid has to see the entire milking, every drop coming out of the cow. But the truth is that from the Gemara and the later place can come out, so that's also fine for the Jewish person to be Yitzhak Nechnas. It means he comes in and out. And, excuse me, when he does that, if he's Yitzhak Nechnas, he makes the mirrors, he makes the Goyim be afraid to be caught in case they would be tampering with the milk. So that's good enough to know that this is, that there wasn't any other milk put into it, and therefore it qualifies as Chalvisol. Okay, and Lamaisa, all Chalvisol is made like that, to one extent or another, that there isn't going to be a Jewish person standing there every single second. By and large, it's going to have some sort of Yetzir Nechlin Center. Now, the Prichadr says that, he says, you know, Yotzev Nechnas really only works if there's only one non-Jewish person on the farm. Because if there'd be more than one, then one of the non-Jews could be standing there by the door, keeping an eye to watch if the Yid is coming back, and he'll be signaling to the other guy who's mixing in the trade milk. So if you have only one guy on the farm, then he can't look out and be mixing in non-kosher milk at the same time. So then that's fine. He says, but if there's more than one, then there might be a lookout calling into the other guy. You know, think about even more nowadays when we have, you know, cell phones and things like that. So one guy could be watching for the mashgiach, or the yid, and the other one could be potentially making trouble. So the Prichadr says that would not be good enough. So, Lumaisa, nowadays we don't exactly follow that, and seemingly the reason for that is because the amount of Yotzev Nechnas that you have to have, and the amount you have to be think about lookouts and things like that, is sort of connected to how easy it is for the person to get non-kosher milk. So if it's easily available, meaning he has three cows and two horses, so then the lookout means if the lookout keeps on, he says, okay, you're safe for the next couple of minutes, I see he's not coming, then I'll put in some, you know, horse's milk. But in the United States, we're in the situation of what the way the Prichadr uses the words of Ein Dover Tami Be'edra, there's no treif animals around that are suitable for milking. And it would take them so long to get the treif milk that even the lookout is not going to do them any good. He doesn't really have enough time from, you know, the time that someone would notice it to put it in, just like if the person by himself, you know, he would see you from the door, well, that's not enough time to sneak something in. So even having two people, it's not going to do the trick. Realistically, nowadays, it's him to put something in. Okay, so seemingly, that's why we allow the Yotzev Nechnas, even in cases where there's more than one guy, but just every farm is going to have more than one guy there. Now, even that said, there is a case where seemingly the Prichadr would apply, and that is when you have one Mashgiach whose job it is to keep an eye and create the Chalvisol for many, many farms. Okay, so there's farms, you know, there are 10 farms producing milk, and he's all those, that milk is coming together to be one Chalvisol production, which is not unusual if you have smaller farms. So that Mashgiach is keeping an eye on all these farms, and he's going from place to place. Now, if the places are far, reasonably far apart, let's say they're half an hour apart from each other, so when the Mashgiach shows up at farm A, then, and nowadays we have telephones, so he shows up at farm A, the guy at farm A can tell the guy at B, you know, you're safe for half an hour. You know, you have a really long amount of time before the Mashiach is ever going to show up again, so seemingly that would be a case where what the Prichadr says would apply, which is one Mashiach in that case is not going to be good enough to be considered Yotzev Nechnas, because, again, because the guy from one place can tell the other people, well, so far away that they could put in a trade null, and therefore you'd have to be, in that case, you'd have to have more than one mashgiach. Now, the Rama says that even if there's ein davar tamei be'edrei, there's nothing, there's no reasonable choices for the people to put in a trade null. Even so, before the milking starts, the yid has to check the container to make sure there's nothing in there from beforehand. In other words, in addition to just watching the milk actually coming out of the cow, he's got to make sure the container is empty because, you know, he had trade milk to start with. That would be, you know, defeat the whole goal of the hashgacha over here. So, so what it means is, Lamaisa, so that's what a mashgiach has to do. He has to go check the milking equipment, make sure all the milking equipment is empty, and before he starts, he has to check the silos, where they're going to store the milk, the trucks, the tanker trucks that it's going to go into, and the other tanks that are going to be along the way in that production. He's got to check the start of the day. He's got to look at all of them and make sure everything is empty. So that means to say is that I talked a second ago about having the Yetziv and Nichnas, and it's true you can have Yetziv and Nichnas, but Yetziv and Nichnas is for the overall hashgacha, but the beginning of the milking definitely needs a mashgiach there, because the mashgiach is going to come there to make sure that all the equipment, the containers, the tanks, the trucks, all those kind of things are empty. So he's got to be there definitely at the beginning. Typically, he has to be there at the end also, because once the milk is produced as chol v'shol, we need someone to seal it. And of course, that sealing is going to have to be done by the mashgiach. That's his job, is to seal it and mark down, you know, what seals it were, however he identifies that these were this is the kosher vet. So we've already knocked it down to he's got to be there for the beginning and for the end also. Now, there's a little bit of a question, and that is, what happens if it's common that cows are milked three times a day? So we'll say midnight, 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. So what happens if there's a lot of cows on the farm, and the milking that started at midnight goes all the way till 6 o'clock in the morning? Okay, and then there's like a break, and then at 8 o'clock, again, 8 o'clock, in the, 2 hours later, they start again, okay? And the mashgiach is on the farm the whole time, okay? He's there. That's his job. He's keeping an eye on this milking. So at 6 o'clock, they finish milking, and then 2 hours, they clean, and then 2 hours later, they start up again with the new milking. So is he required to check that the kelim are empty, that all those, the milking equipment and the tanks, all those things are empty before he starts at 8 o'clock milking? So now, seemingly, the reason why you check containers when you start is because you're afraid there might be milk in there that's not chol v'shol. That's not from a cow. There might be horse's milk inside that container, so you have to check it first. But over here, he's been here the whole time, and he knows that there's nothing in there. The past 6 hours, they milk that actually is going to be considered chol v'shol. So it seems pretty meaningless to tell him that he should check the containers again. There are those who are you know, diehard purists, and they say no. You must check it at the beginning of a milking. But seemingly that's not required. I don't believe that it would be required. I'm not sure about that actually. But seemingly it doesn't make so much sense to require that because what's he checking for? I mean, he's been here the whole time and he knows that, you know, it's just going on and on. Okay. Anyhow, so Dak, to summarize what we have here, the mashgiach needs to be at the beginning of the milking. To make sure the containers are empty. Typically, he has to be there at the end as well. And in order to be Yotzer Nechnas, we'll say that the common thing is that he's got to come by during the milking, at least one time during the milking. That makes him Yotzer Nechnas. So he shows up, Be'erach, he comes at least once in the middle of the milking, if not more, of course. Now, just like with any other kind of Yotzer Nechnas at all that works, when a mashgiach is on a schedule and he's predictable and everybody knows exactly what he's going to do, then that's sort of, it's not a very successful Yetzer Nechnas. So if they know that he comes, let's say the milking starts at 8 o'clock in the morning, he comes at 8 o'clock, and he always comes back at 10:30, then they know that they're safe from 8 till 10:30 and from 10:30 till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So a mashgiach who's Yetzer Nechnas needs to be unpredictable and needs to show up at all random times. And he needs to even sometimes come twice to the same milking, so they don't know, they don't think, oh, once he came once, he'll never come again until the milking ends. Okay. Now, the questions we're not going to talk about is, could a mashgiach watch milking over a camera? And what does he do if you have a farm that's completely automated, that there aren't basically any people doing anything? Those we spoke about once, a long time in the past. It's more than is for today. Okay, now there's another part of hashgacha another part of Chol Yisrael Hashkacha that really has nothing to do with non-kosher species, nothing to do with the traditional non-kosher species, and that is something called DA cows. What does that mean? The cows have four parts of their stomach. The fourth part, which is called the cava, or the abomasum, can become bloated. And what will happen is the cava is supposed to be on the bottom right side of the cow, and it'll move, okay, usually to the left side. Okay, there's different ways for farmers or veterinarians to help solve this problem. This condition is called displaced abomasum, and it's the fourth stomach. The abomasum is in the wrong place, or in short, it's called DA. And there's all kinds of questions about whether the procedures that are done to solve this problem make the animal to a trefa. If they do, and which ones make him to a trefa. And that's totally not our discussion. We talked about it when we learned about shechita and trefas, things like that. We spoke about that question. What's relevant to us is that there's a big divide between how Chol of Yisrael and non-Chol of Yisrael people giving Hashgacha approaches. The people, products that are not going to be Chol of Yisrael, that are going to be Chol of Stam, they are makel about this, and they do not pay any attention to whether there are cows in there that had this surgery, that are DA cows that therefore had a surgery. They don't pay attention to it. And that's, you know, we talk about then, why is that an acceptable position to take? In contrast, milk products that are certified as Chol of Yisrael are makbid on this. Excuse me, and they'll have the mashgiach make sure that there are no DA cows in the herd that's being milked to make Chol of Yisrael milk. So that becomes now a responsibility of the mashgiach, aside from what we talked about beforehand, to make sure that it's actually Chol of Yisrael, that, you know, that there's no check milk, the containers are empty, he's Yetzir V'Nechna, all those kind of things to make it the traditional Chol of Yisrael. Nowadays he has an extra responsibility, which is to make sure that there are no DA cows in the herd. Now with modern, you know, computerized records, that's not as difficult as it sounds. You can tell you can see on the computer which cows had the surgery. You can often see just by looking at the cows, you can see a scar on them if one slips by and gets in. Mashgiach knows. Okay, now that's our first half of what we had to talk about, which is what it takes to make milk Chol of Yisrael. The second half we have to talk about within making Chol of Yisrael is that it's pretty common that Chol of Yisrael milk and other dairy products are made in factories that most of the time do not make Chol of Yisrael. Okay, so they just use a factory to take the first part we were speaking about was the creation, the actual at the farm, and now we're talking about the milk being processed further out of the farm, and it's typically done in places in factories that are not always making Chol of Yisrael. They usually actually making Chol of Stam. And once in a while, maybe once a week or twice a week, they make Chol of Yisrael. So there are two things to talk about relating to that. And the first is like this. In a dairy plant, there are going to be the dairy plants that have these large silos that hold liquid milk that they're about to use to either print the bottles or to make cheese or whatever they're going to do with it, but they have these big silos that hold milk. Okay? The silos are always, the product in it is always cold, the milk has to be refrigerated, so it's always cold. And the way they're constructed, it's not very easy to cache them. Okay? Caching them with boiling water, as might potentially be required, is very difficult. It's not difficult to do the boiling water per se, that's not terribly difficult. The problem is that the tanks can collapse if you boil them up and then cool them down too quickly. Okay, so anyhow, it's difficult to cache them. So lots of people avoid the kashering. Well, what do you mean avoid the kashering? It's trafe. And the idea is the following. Since the milk is always cold, then the only way that Tom transfers into or out of the silo is through kavush. Okay, now kavush takes 24 hours to happen. so we have this milk silo that is held non-kosher. It had milk that was not Chol of Yisrael, so it's not Chol of Yisrael. Okay, and now if we want, what we could do is we could make sure that the Chol of Yisrael milk never becomes kavush in here. So the tank might be not kosher, but we're going to keep that non-kosher tam, or the not Chol of Yisrael tam, from getting into our Chol of Yisrael milk. Okay, now, sometimes, once in a while, that's just a scheduling issue. Make sure that the milk never sits here for 24 hours. Okay, make sure from the time it gets in, till it gets out of the silo, it's never 24 hours. Okay? That's not always so realistic because it takes a few hours to fill up a truck, a tanker truck full of milk, and then it takes a few truckloads of milk to fill up the silo, and then you have to process it. So it's usually pretty difficult to schedule it just perfectly that it never sits for 24 hours in the silo. So rather, I don't know exactly use the word trick, but a method that they use to avoid being covered for 24 hours. And that's like this. When we say the tonic has to be is covered, means for 24 hours, 24 continuous hours, it sits in, 24 consecutive hours, it sits in the tank. But if it's moving around within the tank, coverage will still happen. So, for example, if you have a tanker truck driving along the road, and the oil that's in it is sloshing back and forth, that's okay. It's still considered to be coverage, even though it's moving around, because basically the same oil is sitting in that container for 24 hours straight, so that's considered, that creates coverage. But that's only if it's the same liquid. If it's a different liquid, in contact with this container for 24 hours, then there's no coverage. So like, for example, imagine if the oil was flowing through a pipe. So there could be oil flowing through the pipe continuously, you know, on and on and on for days on end, but the same oil, the same liquid is not there. It keeps changing from one to the other. In that case, we do not have a concern of coverage, even though there's something there for 24 hours, but it's not the same thing for 24 hours. So the Chol Yisrael productions take advantage of this idea. And what they do is they have a silo, and the silo is, you know, filling up with milk. And what they'll do is, before 24 hours ends, they'll pump all the milk out of the silo. But there isn't another silo to put it into. There isn't a spare silo to put it to. So what they do is, they pump it out of the silo, out of the bottom of the silo, and pump it right back into the top of the silo. So, and the thinking is, as Shachter says, how he describes it, what we're doing is, we took out every gallon of milk that we take out of the silo, is now out. That gallon's out. When we put it back in, it's as if new milk being put into there. It's milk that didn't have a chance to have coverage in it. The coverage that it was having, the soaking that it was having in this tank ended, it finished, it got taken out of the tank, out of the silo. And now it's coming in, it's starting at 24 hours again, starting as fresh, a new 24 hours. So essentially what we're doing is we're turning this silo into a pipe. What we're doing is we're saying is there is liquid in there for 24 hours, but it's not the same liquid. It's liquid, there's liquid that's there now, and then before 24 hours ends, this liquid is all taken out and new liquid is put into instead. Now it's not all taken out at once. It's taken out slowly. And it's pumped from the bottom back into the top, and the thinking is that that's considered to be as if it's in two, it's new, so to speak, new milk coming into here, and there's no coverage. Now, other people didn't agree with that. Others said, it doesn't work like that, come on. So you should just say the silo and the pump and the pipes is all one big container, and look at it just sloshing around. But most people in Chol Yisrael, who give Hashgach in Chol Yisrael, are makel about this, and they'll say that that is a method of preventing coverage. Now, so now it gets a little technical, which is, what do we have to do to prevent this, to stop this within 24 hours? So two things we have to pass by to get that through. The first is, both Rebelsky and Shachter thought that as long as most of the milk in the tank, in the silo is, so to speak, new, that's good enough. That's our first step. How do we know if most of the milk in the silo has been pumped out? Now, you can't just say, well, we pumped out half of it. The example I'm about to give you is 18,000 gallons, just pumped out 9,000 gallons, and then you're good. And the reason why you can't do that is because once this milk is being circulated back in. So the first 100 gallons you take out are completely, so to speak, old milk. But the next 100 gallons you take out are a little bit of new milk and a lot of old milk. So how will you know that you've gotten that 9,000 gallons of old milk? That's what we have to get out. We can't just get out 9,000 gallons. We need 9,000 old gallons out. Okay. So this goes back years ago when I was working for you. I spoke to someone, Dr. Don Engelberg. At the time, he was the chairman of the Department of Physics in Queensborough. And it's asking, could he give me a formula that will help me figure this out? And he came up with the following formula. I'll say it out and explain how it works. The formula is H equals V times 0.7 divided by R. Okay, where H is the amount of hours of pumping you're going to need. and V is the volume, the initial volume, how much was in the tank, and that means in gallons, and R is the flow rate of the pump, okay, also in gallons per hour. So an example that I made up is we have a silo that holds 18,000 gallons, and it pumps at 50 gallons a minute. So 50 gallons a minute is to be 1,000 gallons an hour. So that means, so H equals, the V here is, V is 18,000. So H equals 18,000 times 0.7 divided by R, the rate, which is 3,000. And that comes out to, the answer to that is the H is 4.2, meaning it takes 4 hours and 12 minutes. That's 2/10 of an hour. 4 hours and 12 minutes to circulate the milk that you'll have gotten a roiv of the milk out of the bottom and back into the top. Okay, now, the last thing that we need to talk about is the following. The Ramah is quite clear that just like you can't eat food made on Trev Kalim, you also cannot eat food made on Chol Vakum Kalim. Okay, if Kalim used for Chol Vakum, then you cannot use those Kalim for kosher food unless you catch them first. Okay, so a modern question that we have is, what about if it was used for Chol Stam? It wasn't used for Chol Akum, it was used for Chol Stam, which again, we're not talking about really today, but there is such a thing. There are people who eat Chol Stam, meaning they eat what's not Chol Vizol. People who want to do the right thing, and they do that anyhow. So there are three applications of that question. We're not going to talk about them, I'm just going to mention the applications. One is, if I'm a person who only eats Chol Vizol, can I eat in someone else's house if they cook the food in their house and they only eat Chol Stam? So this in general, this is applied if I'm eating in someone else's house. The next is, what happens if someone roasted something that was Chol Stam on the fire without any liquid, like they made milk cookies? Okay, it was Chol Stam cookies. So should we say you need to do Lieben Gomer, like you usually have to do, when something like a cookie is made in a sheet pan? Would you have to do Lieben? Or do you say that the... since for heter, maybe we should look at it as heter. It's only just milk, because it's not iser, it's only heter. If you hold a chol stam as mutter, maybe we should say it's heter, and therefore you could just get away with hagala. And the third question is, there are kulas about kashrut if the kavush, if the iser that was kavush in it was only heter, so should we, those apply to chol stam? Okay, so all those questions, and this general question of how we should treat Chol Stam as Isra Heter, we're going to talk about it in Mitzvah at a different time when we speak about Chol Stam. That's really the focus. If we were talking about Chol Stam, then we're going to talk about those kind of questions in that discussion. But for today's purposes, the following thing is like this. Most Hashgachas will be makel about these questions that I just spoke about if, two things. First of all, the Kalim are in the Ben Yarmi, they haven't been used in 24 hours, and the new product that we're making, the thing we're about to make, the reason why we're kashering is because we're making something that's going to be considered parv. So we're kashering from milchigs to parv, the milchigs is chol stam, they would be makel about the things we said beforehand, to kasher in the way as if we're kashering from heter, meaning from milchigs, rather than kashering from iser, which would be chol stam. That's if they were making something that was parv. But if the people are kashering the kalim to make something that could be called Yisrael, okay, that means they're making something that making from Chol Stam milk to Chol Vizol milk or cheese or something like that, where the thing they're going to be making is going to be Chol Vizol or something directed specifically at people who eat only Chol Vizol, then they would not follow in these cookies. And the thinking is going to be that a lot of the people who buy food that's specifically Chol Vizol follow a Masorah that says that's Machmir on the Shire we spoke about, and therefore it would be misleading to those people, even though in din is probably correct that you can be mako about the shadows, as we'll speak about when we talk about Chol Stam, especially the way it's done when it's in the binyame and but those people would not want that kind of a product, and therefore it's misleading to sell them this kind of a product made in a way that they wouldn't have been happy with. Okay, one last thing to mention is in Chalkos Pijam, he brings Poiskim who speak about whether you have to be makbid on this din of kashrut after Chol of Akum, we have to be makbid on that, if it'll mean that you have something that can't be kashered. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, so an example for us of something that would not be able to be kashered is, what happens if you had a dairy company whose homogenizer had ceramic pistons? not so common in dairies, but it can happen. So ceramic is chayrus and can't be kosher. Or it was in a distillation column and the packing was ceramic. So in those kind of cases, if you're going to say that you have to kosher if the chol stam, if the chol, not chol stam, chol akum, if you say kosher if the chol akum, you have to be, do that, you have to be makban on that. Even if it'll mean you won't be able to kosher the kli at all, then you'd be stuck over here. But there are those who thought you'd be mako. Obviously, it needs a sheilas chacham, and other studim lahakel maybe like for his chol stam. Another thing to think about. I'm just mentioning such a shita that maybe if you won't be able to kasher altogether, that would be a reason to be mako that this din about kashering if the chol vakum.